Good morning. Over the last probably couple of weeks, I've been reading in 1 Samuel. So we're going to spend some time in Samuel, primarily 1 Samuel. Not at the beginning, we'll kind of jump into it partway through. So we'll get into it with Saul and David. And specifically, I've just been reading the story. I'll tell you as I read today some of the passages, probably a lot of it, might be a little bit of a mix, but a lot of it I'm going to read out of the NLT. I've been reading 1 Samuel out of the NLT, and just as I would read, a lot of what I've covered is Saul. You obviously, David quickly comes into the story with Saul, but I've spent a lot of time thinking about how do I not make the same mistakes Saul made? What were the mistakes that Saul made? And so I want to look at that, and then I want to contrast it with David, and just kind of some of the things that I see with Saul and David. So that's what we're going to do. So let's get into it. And we're going to start. We all know, I'm trusting, let me say, I don't want to make that assumption, but the story of Saul, he is the first king of Israel. The people, eventually, God uses Moses to lead them out of Israel. And then he has different judges that are ruling over them. But God was serving and was their king. And the people are looking around and they're seeing what everybody else has, and they're like, we want what they all have. They all have a king. And so that's kind of where we pick this up. Finally, God says, fine, if you want a king, I'll give you a king. And we get, he appoints Saul. What do you know about Saul? Physically, you get the impression he was an impressive man. I think at the time that they find him after he's anointed, then they do this other, Samuel anoints him as king, but then they do this other process where God affirms that by doing a, I think it was a casting of lots, and they can't find him. He's hiding in the baggage, and it says when he comes out, he's a head taller than everybody else. He's a big man. And starts off, Samuel gives him this instruction. So 1 Samuel chapter 10, that's where we're going to start. We'll read one verse out of 1 Samuel chapter 10. It's important instruction he gives him in verse 8 specifically. He says to him in verse 8, 1 Samuel 10, 8, he says, "And you shall go down before me to Gilgal, and behold, I'll come down to you to offer burnt offerings and sacrifice peace offerings. You shall wait 7 days until I come to you and show you what you should do." So that's really the one key instruction that he gives Saul after anointing him, and that's what he does in the beginning of chapter 10. I'll say when you read the story, a lot happens in the next, what it seems like a lot happens in the next 7 days. But let's jump forward to this story now in chapter 13. So Israel's at war with the Philistines, and Saul is 30 years old. He's got some soldiers there. It starts off, and we're going to pick it up in verse 8 because the Philistines are going to attack Israel. So in verse 8, it says, "Now he waited 7 days." This was Saul. So he waits 7 days according to the appointed time set by Samuel that we read in chapter 10, verse 8. But Samuel didn't come to Gilgal, and the people were scattering from him, from Saul. So Saul said, "Bring to me the burnt offering and the peace offerings." And he offered the burnt offerings. As soon as he finished offering the burnt offering, behold, Samuel arrives. And Saul went out to meet him and greet him. But Samuel said, "What have you done?" And Saul said, "Because I saw that the people were scattering from me, and that you did not come within the appointed days, and that the Philistines were assembling at Michmash. Therefore I said, now the Philistines will come down against me at Gilgal, and I have not asked the favor of the Lord. So I forced myself and offered the burnt offering." Samuel said to Saul, "You have acted foolishly. You've not kept the commandment of the Lord your God, which he commanded you. For now the Lord would have established your kingdom over Israel forever. but now your kingdom shall not endure. The Lord has sought out for himself a man after his own heart, and the Lord has appointed him as a ruler over his people, because you have not kept the Lord, what you have not kept what the Lord commanded you. So you see this first disobedience. And I'm going to say that when I have read this, I think my reaction over the years has always been like, wow, Saul was on, I'm going to use the expression, a short leash. I don't know, wait, like, you read this and it's like one mistake, this is how it can feel. I will say this because I've read this, one mistake and that's it, you're out. Now, he wasn't out immediately, but he says, I'm going to find a different king. It's interesting. So this is the question. I even actually read this to the kids last night. And I was like, what do you think? Like, why did Saul get the hook, so to speak, so quickly? So I want to get into it. I'm not going to necessarily get into it quite yet. Let's look at the second situation we have. So this is chapter 13. So let's go to chapter 15. Jump forward a couple chapters. We're going to read a fair amount. I will warn you, we're going to read a reasonable amount of chapter 15. We'll come back to that one in 13. We'll pick out a few things there. But for now, you've heard the story. And there's this question, wow, that's it was already decreed. His kingship is not going to prosper. So now, chapter 15, 1 to 3. Then Samuel said to Saul, the Lord sent me to anoint you as king over his people, over Israel. Now, therefore, listen to the words of the Lord. Thus says the Lord of hosts, I'll punish Amalek for what he did to Israel, how he set himself against him on the way while he was coming up from Egypt. Now go and strike Amalek and utterly destroy all that he has. Do not spare him, but put to death both man and woman, child and infant, ox and sheep, camel and donkey. So we jump down to verse 8, and it says, now he captured Agag. So Saul, when it says there, he says, do this to him. I think him is broadly to all of Amalek, all the people of Amalek. It's not, Amalek wasn't a person. Amalek was the Amalekites, right? So he's talking broadly. So now we have the king of Amalek is named Agag. So Saul captures Agag, the Amalekite king, but completely destroyed everyone else. Saul and his men spared Agag's life and kept the best of the sheep and goats and the cattle, the fat calves and the lambs, everything, in fact, that appealed to them. They destroyed only what was worthless or of poor quality. Then the Lord said to Samuel, I'm sorry that I ever made Saul king, for he's not been loyal to me, and he refused. Sorry, I lost my spot there. Bear with me. I'm sorry that I ever made Saul king, for he's not been loyal to me and has refused to obey my commandments. And Samuel was so deeply moved when he heard this that he cried out to the Lord all night. So, did everybody catch the disobedience? This one, I think, is more clear, right? God gave him a very clear instruction, destroy everything. But they don't. They keep everything. I liked kind of the way NLT says it. It's this is everything. In fact, they kept everything that appealed to them, and they only destroyed what was worthless or of poor quality. And so let's get into the conversation then that happens between Samuel and Saul. Verse 12, early the next morning, Samuel went to find Saul, and someone told him Saul went to the town of Carmel to set up a monument to himself. Then he went to Gilgal, and when Samuel finally found him, Saul greeted him cheerfully. He's been busy doing the work of the Lord. Why wouldn't he be cheerful? Right, you're going to find out that's his mind. May the Lord bless you, he said. I have carried out the Lord's command. He's encouraged. Then what is all the bleating of sheep and goats and the lowing of cattle, I hear, Samuel demanded. It's true that the army spared the best of the sheep, goats, and cattle, Saul admitted, but they're going to sacrifice them to the Lord your God. We have destroyed everything else. It's so easy to read this, and I'll say this is over the last couple weeks when I read this, and I just encourage you today, don't just write it off, like in the sense, oh, this is obvious. I would never do that. It's really actually interesting how Saul is in a place. Now, God is still speaking to Saul, right? God stops speaking to Saul. That comes here if we were to keep reading. But at this point, he's still speaking to Saul through Samuel. And Saul is rejoicing. He's cheerful because he's been doing the work. In his mind, he's been doing the work of the Lord. And the question is, like, it's so easy to look at Saul and say, well, I would never do that. And I'm not sitting here, like, but I think we, from every one of these, we take a warning. Like, how do you come to this place where God is saying what you don't know, what Saul doesn't know, is God's talking to Samuel saying, I'm sorry I ever made this guy king. And Saul is sitting here saying, I'm crushing it. And so it's a warning to, like, how do you get there, right? I'm dramatizing it perhaps slightly, but I'm doing it for a reason in the sense of, it could happen. It could happen. It did happen. Then Samuel in 16:15-16, then Samuel said to Saul, stop, listen to what the Lord had told me last night. What did he tell you? Saul asked. And Samuel told him, although you may think little of yourself, and you are not the leader, are you not the leader of the tribes of Israel? The Lord has anointed you, you king of Israel. And the Lord sent you on a mission and told you, go and completely destroy the sinners, the Amalekites, until they are all dead. Why haven't you obeyed the Lord? Why did you rush for the plunder and do what was evil in the Lord's sight? But I did obey the Lord, Saul insisted. I carried out the mission he gave me. I brought back King Agag, but I destroyed everyone else. And then my troops brought in the best of the sheep, goats, cattle, plunder to sacrifice to the Lord your God in Gilgal. But Samuel replied, what is more pleasing to the Lord, your burnt offerings and sacrifices, or your obedience to his voice? Listen, obedience is better than sacrifice, and submission is better than the offering of fat rams. Offering the fat of rams, sorry. Rebellion is as sinful as witchcraft, and stubbornness as bad as worshiping idols. But because you have rejected the command of the Lord, he's rejected you as king. Saul is pretty convinced that he has been doing the work of the Lord. But I did obey the Lord, he insisted. I carried out the mission he gave me. So finally, before we kind of get into some of the things that I observed, let's just finish the story out. Jump down to, just carry on in 24. Then Saul admitted, so this is the first time Saul, there's some admission here. Then Saul admitted to Samuel, yes, I have sinned. I have disobeyed your instructions and the Lord's command, for I was afraid of the people and did what they demanded. But now please forgive my sin and come back with me so that I may worship the Lord. But Samuel replied, I'll not go back with you. Since you have rejected the Lord's command, he has rejected you as king of Israel. Now jump down to 30. It says, then Saul pleaded again, I know I've sinned, but please at least honor me before the elders of my people and before Israel by coming back with me so that I may worship the Lord your God. So Samuel finally agreed and went back with him, and Saul worshiped the Lord. There's more that we could cover on Saul, but that's the part I wanted to read. And then I just want to highlight a few things to me that stood out. If we go back to the very first story, there's find exactly the in verse 11 there's something to me that really struck me. It says, "And Saul said, because I saw that the people were scattering from me." It's two things. I saw. So he's going by what he can see. And what he can see is not good, right? He sees the Philistines are coming. He sees the people are leaving. And then he realizes that Samuel has messed up, right? It's your fault, Samuel. That's the way I read the next statement. And he says, "And you did not come on the appointed days." So a few things interesting there. One of the things you see by Saul, this is a warning. It's not just to muse over how bad Saul was. It's not the point of it. It's to take it as a warning. Saul fell prey to walking by what he could see and not walking by faith. He went, he looked at his circumstances, and in the end, because he could see his circumstances weren't good, and he wasn't walking by faith, then he disobeyed. Samuel had specifically said to him, "I'm going to come and I'm going to offer the sacrifice. I'm going to show you what to do." And then Saul says, "I forced myself because I hadn't sought for the Lord." So this feeling of like, I'm doing this. I got to do it now by his own strength. And then the other warning there is, and we see this happen in the second case too. Whose fault was it? According to Saul, it was Samuel's fault, right? Samuel didn't come when he was supposed to come. Had you come when you were supposed to come, Samuel, we wouldn't be in this mess, right? But now, thanks to you and your tardiness, we're in this mess, right? The danger is, it's so easy. The flesh will always want to find someone to blame. It's not our fault. So it's actually a very real warning that to be willing, and you see this, so if we keep going, okay, the other thing he did was he would justify his actions, right? It was a mix of justification and blaming, right? Because we get to the second case, and the disobedience was the fact that they justified their actions. So he has a command, just destroy everything. This is like, I think it was Lisa last week talked about Balaam and Balak, right? Was it, and Balaam's the prophet, right? I can get confused between Balak and Balaam. Okay, so Balaam, remember the story, what was the issue? Why was God upset with him? Because the first time he went and sought the Lord and said, "Do you want me to go?" And God said, "No." Then they come back with more money and he seeks the Lord again. And now all of a sudden God says, "Yes." And it was like, as I can just picture Balaam going, "We're aligned. The offer's a little sweeter. Now this makes, I understand why you said no the first time because it was going to get sweeter. So I'm glad you made me wait." Like you could see how you justify it. And again, you can almost make it amusing, right? But the danger is like somehow, the flesh gets involved and you lose sight of the simplicity of just saying, "Lord, you told me to kill everything. This is where so often it says that we walk by faith, we don't walk by what we see. One could also say we walk by faith, we don't walk by what we understand. Because if we sit here and say, "This doesn't make sense. Why would I do this? It is negative to me in some manner. Financially, it's negative. Whatever. Reputationally, ooh, this is going to kill my reputation, Lord. This is going to kill what people think of me. That doesn't make any sense, Lord. Because how will I, you can, again, how can I minister to them if they think I'm a fool?" Like you can see how you justify these things where you all of a sudden find a way to kind of not fully obey what God's asking you to do. And that was the case with Saul. Like he could justify it so many ways. "Well, we're going to sacrifice this to the Lord. And it's the men, it's not me. Like, it's like all this stuff is just, again, the pointing of the finger was so, there were so many things. Finally, the last thing. What do you pick up? Come back to the story. Many of you will be there already, but in the last thing, what's his final thing? So after all of this happens, he finally admits, okay, I did sin. What's his focus in admitting he sinned? What's he trying to do? He's trying to save his reputation, right? Okay, you're right. I messed up. Now, can you come back with me and let's worship together? No. But he pleads with him. The piece, the couple verses I skipped, he reaches out and he grabs his robe when he's walking away and rips it. And Samuel turns around and says, this is a living example how God's ripping the kingdom away from you. And then he says, no, you just got to come with me because I just want to look good in front of the people. That's not the words he used, but that's the reality. Like, I just don't want them to go back and you not to be there. Like, you should be coming back with me. We're celebrating. We've worshiped the Lord. And it's going to raise questions if I go back and you're not there worshiping with me. It's going to seem like something's off. So again, it all came back to what people thought of him. And it's, again, so easy to look at this and go, that would never be me. I will tell you, it could be me. I know it. I know it. I care what people think. I care what people think of me. It weighs in my mind. At times, like, if I do this, ooh, what are people going to think? So we read these things. We see examples of, okay, Lord, I don't want to be there. I don't want to do these things. The important thing for me when I read this, and I'll say this, is, again, I've already stressed this, like, to look at this and go, Lord, I don't want to be like Saul. So, Lord, help me. Help me not to. It's not then to sit here and be in fear, but it's to recognize, like, yeah, that could be me, Lord. I don't want to justify kind of half obedience, which is really what Saul did in the one case, and he was thinking, I obeyed the commands of the Lord. We justify and we compromise. Lord, I don't want to compromise. I want to walk in obedience. Lord, I want you to continue to change me where less and less I care about what people think, and more all I care about is what you think. And I die to worrying about what my reputation in this world. I die to that. And that whatever someone else thinks doesn't matter. Let's look at David. Why did God pick David? Because he was a man after God's own heart. I actually did a search this morning. It's like seeing if there's a verse out there that says the first king was a king after the people's heart and the second king was a king after God's own heart. And there isn't a specific verse. There is a verse where God says, where Samuel, I think God through Samuel basically says, like, I've given you your king and I picked a man, you get the impression, who's like you. He's got a heart like you have. So here's what you get when you want somebody like you. That's how I kind of see it. There's not a verse that says it, but I do think in a lot of ways when you look at the story of Israel, Saul captured a lot of that. And then David comes and it's a different story. It's a story where we see a man after God's own heart. And the nice, in a way, David's not perfect. We know that. We know he sinned. He sinned in actually great ways. But through that, we see how a man after God's own heart responds, which contrasts how Saul would respond. So let's just look at a few passages. I'll actually have less passages, perhaps, on David, I will say. But the first one, I just think, is interesting. When Samuel goes to anoint him, So it's chapter 16, 6 and 7. When they arrived, Samuel took one look at Eliab and thought, surely this is the Lord's anointed. But the Lord said to Samuel, don't judge by his appearance or height, which is a total contrast to Saul, right? For I have rejected him. The Lord doesn't see things the way you see them. People judge by outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. So even Samuel, I think, was learning through this, right? Because his first reaction, he sees Eliab, and Eliab was probably maybe a lot like Saul, real physical specimen. Yeah, that's the king. This is the king that we need. And he says, God says to him, Samuel, no, I'm looking for the heart. And then you think of, we don't get a clear picture. You get this picture, though, that clearly David was a smaller man. The one passage that comes to my mind, there's probably clearer passages, but what happens when he goes to fight Goliath? Saul says, put this armor on, and you get this picture of a man drowning in a much larger man's armor. He says, I can't go with this armor. I've never tested it. And then in 1 Samuel 17, 32 to 37, let's read that. This is now the story of Goliath. Don't worry about this Philistine, David told Saul. So David, we remember this. David's running around. He's asking, trying to make sure he fully understands what it was that Saul had said he would do for someone that was willing to fight this giant. And so he gets, people hear about that. They take him before Saul. We pick up the story here. Don't worry about this Philistine, David told Saul. I'll go fight him. Don't be ridiculous, Saul replied. There's no way you can fight this Philistine and possibly win. You're only a boy, and he's been a man of war since his youth. But David persisted. I've been taking care of my father's sheep and goats, he said. When a lion or a bear comes to steal a lamb from the flock, I go after it with a club and rescue the lamb from its mouth. If the animal turns on me, I catch it by the jaw and club it to death. I've done this to both lions and bears, and I'll do it to this pagan Philistine too. For he has defied the army of the living God. The Lord has rescued me from the claws of the lion and the bear. The Lord that has rescued me from the claws of the lion and the bear will rescue me from this Philistine. And then we jump down to verse 47. In response to Goliath, all that Goliath is saying to him when he's actually out going into the battle, it says, and everyone assembled here. This is where David's heart was. Everyone assembled here will know that the Lord rescues his people, not with sword and spear. This is the Lord's battle, and he'll give it to us. Right? He had a longing for these Israelites to see, you guys, God doesn't save by your strength, by your intelligence, by your might. He saves because the battle is his, and he will do it. He will win this battle for us. But this is an amazing story to contrast Saul, who would walk by what his eyes could see. And he'd look at what his eyes saw, and it would cause him to do foolish things because he was walking by what he saw, not by faith. But with David, this is like the complete opposite. This giant is there, and he's just looking at it going, I'm not fazed by what I see. I am confident that God can win this battle for me. And David, that's faith we know. That's faith that had been tested. It was funny, Michael and I went for a run yesterday. I never said this to him. I don't have to verbalize everything that's going through my mind to my children until I get up here, then I seem to do it. Normally, I will carry bear spray or I'll carry dog spray, something with me. And this time of year, obviously, I'm not concerned about bears, but I am concerned about running into a cougar. And I was thinking about this story. I'm like, Lord, if you help David, if we run into one of these things, if you help David, you can help me. This is literally what's going through my mind. So I'm encouraging myself in the Lord while we're out there running on a not a well-used trail where I know, because I've had incidents recently with a cougar, that I know that they're out there, and it's something that is in my mind, right? And yet I'm building my faith that God, if you help David destroy the lion, you can help me if we run into one of these things. So you see a young man, and man doesn't matter, a young person that has been through tests. So to the young people, man, even when you're young, God, and I don't know necessarily what that battle looks like, but as a young person, you can be mighty in faith and see God help you. And when that happens, as you get older and the tests come, those are the things that are so precious, because you can remember the works of the Lord and say, you know what, I remember when. And Lord, you didn't fail me then, and I know you won't fail me now. And that the Lord can sustain you and help you. So I encourage you in that. The next one, quickly, chapter 30, let's jump there. So here's a situation. So we talked about not going by what he sees. The other thing, right, that Saul dealt with was when his men turned on him, and how Saul responded when his people turned on him. David has the same situation. This is actually different. Saul never actually dealt with what David is dealing with here in chapter 30. Because Saul had the situation where the army was just fleeing. David's situation is amped up. The army isn't fleeing. His soldiers actually want to turn around and kill him. And that's where we pick this up. So this is the story. After David fled to Philistine, they were living in this town called Ziklag. They went out. I won't get it, like, just real quick. They left. They came back. And while they were gone, another group came in and attacked the city, burnt the city, took everything, including all their family. And so the men, they come back, and everybody's gone. Their families are gone. And then the people, his men, are wanting to kill him. So let's read this. 3 days later, chapter 30, verse 1. 3 days later, when David and his men arrived home at their town of Ziklag, they found that the Amalekites had made a raid into the Negev and Ziklag, but they had crushed Ziklag and burned it to the ground. They'd carried off the women and children and everyone else without killing anyone. When David and his men saw the ruins and realized what had happened to their families, they wept until they could weep no more. And David's two wives, Ahinoam from Jezreel and Abigail, the widow of Nabal from Carmel, were among those captured. And David was now in great danger because all his men were very bitter about losing their sons and daughters, and they began to talk of stoning him. But David found strength in the Lord his God. And then he said to Abiathar the priest, "Bring me the ephod." So Abiathar brought it. Then David asked the Lord, should I chase after the band of raiders? Will I catch them? And the Lord told him, yes, go after them. You'll surely recover everything that was taken from you. So he has learned, David, over the years, he's learned to strengthen himself in the Lord, even in the midst of incredibly, incredibly difficult times. This is very different than what we see from Saul, because when things got really difficult for Saul, he didn't know what to do. He was making bad decisions. He didn't have confidence that God was going to help him. So then he just starts doing kind of irrational things, in fact, disobeying the commands of God. David contrasts that. Okay, so we talked about how Saul walked by sight versus faith. We see David walk by faith and not by what he sees. We see then another one. The other ones there, we'd said, blame others. And Saul would blame others. He wouldn't look inward. Okay, let's look at how David would respond. These are the tougher ones, where David made some pretty, he sinned greatly. So in 2 Samuel chapter 12, verse 13, this is after he sinned with Bathsheba. He's murdered Uriah. And then Nathan comes and confronts him with this story. If you've read it, maybe you have, maybe you haven't, but he tells him this story about sheep. Remember, David is a shepherd. David is so irate over the story that he says, like, he's so mad. And then Nathan says, this person, this rich man in the story who wouldn't use any of his sheep and went and stole from this poor family the only sheep they had that was like a member of their family and killed it to feed these visitors. This rich man who did this horrific thing, David, that's you. And David knows immediately what he says. And then it says, this is how David responds. It says, then David confessed to Nathan, "I have sinned against the Lord." 12 verse 13 of 2 Samuel. And Nathan replied, "Yes, but the Lord has forgiven you and you won't die for this sin." So his life is spared, but there is loss of life. There's some major consequences for this sin. But then Psalm 51, if you don't know it, Psalm 51 is a psalm that David wrote in response to this when he sinned with Bathsheba. And the interesting thing when you look at this is the contrast. This is this famous verse, right? What it was Saul's justification for his disobedience. Yeah, but we're going to use it to sacrifice, Lord, to the Lord. Samuel, you don't understand. Like, we have saved the cream of the crop. It is going to be one of the greatest sacrifices to the Lord. And David pens this psalm after sinning. And he says in 16 and 17 of Psalm 51, "For you do not delight in sacrifice. Otherwise, I would give it. You're not pleased with burnt offering. The sacrifices of God are a broken spirit. A broken and a contrite heart, O God, you'll not despise." David has a revelation. Because in the law, if you sin, there was like guidelines, and the guidelines were give a sacrifice. And David has this revelation. Lord, you don't care if I bring you some lamb or ram or anything like that. Lord, you want me to obey. You want me to obey, Lord, and I didn't obey. He's crying out. He's like, Lord, create in me a clean heart, O God. Change me. This is his response when he sins. So different than Saul, who justifies and blames others and all of that. David's just crying out, Lord, change me. Lord, make me. This is the heart. When you see a person who has a heart after God, this is what God's looking for. Now, I pray that none of us will sin in this measure that David sinned. But no matter what it is, that the heart would be when you see you stumble, whatever it is, that your heart is to just turn around and say, Lord, it's no one else's fault but mine. The devil will be there to try and help you justify your actions, to help you blame it on somebody else. The devil is great at that stuff. Just own it like David owned it and respond like David responded. Lord, change me. Lord, make me the man or woman you want me to be. And this, whatever it was that I did, this isn't the man or woman you want me to be. Lord, forgive me and change me. And God is faithful and just. He will forgive our sins, just like he forgave David. And sometimes, I'll tell you, there's a consequence. If we sow to the flesh, from the flesh we will reap corruption. When David sinned, there was a consequence. Sin brings forth death. The wages of sin is death. The wages of David's sin with Bathsheba was death. The child died, right? So God was clear. He's true. He's just, but he's merciful. And you just see this example from David of just a longing. And this is one of the things about a man or a woman after God's own heart is a longing. Lord, change me. Okay, let's try and finish up. The second time David sinned, you can read this. It was in 2 Samuel chapter 24. He went and he took a census of the people. He counted what a census is. So he went, he wanted to know, and he went to the leader of his army and said, I want you to go count how many soldiers we have. And the leader of his army is like, don't do this, David. Why are you doing this? But David pressed him and said, no, I want to know what the number is. So he does it, and afterwards, his conscience is bothering him. He knows that he sinned. And a prophet comes to him, confronts him on it, and again, it says, I'll just read this part from chapter 24 of 2 Samuel. Now David's heart troubled him after he had numbered the people, so David said to the Lord, I have sinned greatly in what I have done, but now, Lord, please take away the iniquity of your servant, for I have acted very foolishly. So he actually confessed his sin and humbled himself before the Lord before anybody came to him. He did it because his conscience was bothering him. And then the prophet comes and says, okay, God's giving you three choices of the consequence for your sin. And David chooses the last one, which is 3 days of pestilence, because he says, I don't want, one of the options was like an army is going to come in. One was a famine. And he just said, Lord, I lay myself at your feet for your mercy. I'm crying out for your mercy. And this angel comes in and just starts killing people. And then it comes to Jerusalem, and God says, stop. And David's heart man, it's so, he sinned, but his heart, he says at the end of this in verse, I think it's 17, then David spoke to the Lord when he saw the angel who was striking down the people and said, behold, it is I who have sinned and it is I who have done wrong. But these sheep, meaning the people, he said, what have they done? Please let your hand be against me and against my father's house, Lord. Don't hurt these people, Lord. I was the one who sinned. Okay, the last thing I wanted to touch on, David's view, like Saul was so concerned about what people would think. So this, when they bring the ark back into the city, you remember, you may have heard this story many times, but he's dancing and he's full of joy. And his one of his wives, who is the daughter of Saul, sees him and is disgusted by him. And is dancing, is just so upset. And she says to him, how distinguished the king of Israel looked today, shamelessly exposing himself to the servant girls like any other vulgar person might do. And David retorted to Michal, I was dancing before the Lord who chose me above your father and all his family. He appointed me as a leader of Israel, the people of the Lord. So I celebrate before the Lord, yes, and I am willing to look even more foolish than this, even to be humiliated in my own eyes. But those servant girls that you think I was shaming myself before, you mentioned, he says, but those servant girls you mentioned will indeed think that I am distinguished. If somebody is heart is right. See, there's people that aren't interested in serving the Lord, and they could see a decision that we make and say, what a fool. What a fool. But we don't know the other side. Right? We don't know that the maybe the one brother or sister that doesn't even know, you don't even know they're watching, that their faith might be built. That God could do mighty things and say, wow, that person, a willingness to just be a fool for Jesus and just be obedient and walk in obedience, whatever it might be. And God can use that. So I just think for me, that's something I want to continue to grow in, Lord. I don't want to worry about what anybody else thinks or anything. I just want to serve you and be obedient to you, Lord, and only concerned about you. It comes back to when I shared a few weeks ago about seeking first his kingdom, right? And the focus would be that at the end of our days, we are only going to stand before one person, right? And we only want to hear those words from that one person, which is, well done, good and faithful servant, right? That needs to be the focus, right? It's so easy, and the devil will continue. Just pray, Lord, continue to peel back those layers of pride that want me to worry about other people and what they think of me. So anyway, this took longer than I thought. But anyway, I hope you can ponder on it. Saul and David. And just looking at Saul and saying, Lord, I don't want to follow that example, Lord. Help me to be like David, Lord. Help me to walk by faith, not by sight. Lord, to trust you completely, to know that the battle is yours and not mine. And Lord, if I stumble, I know that I have an advocate. Lord, help me to own it, not try and blame others, justify my actions. And Lord, just repent and to turn, right? And to just say, Lord, I only care about what you think. Help me to only care about what you think. So be encouraged, ponder on it. I'm sure there's many more things you can draw out of this, but a few things for you to think about.